Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Chaim Chasdai, Meir Ben Yecheskel, Binyamin Ben Meir, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I want to speak about two subjects this week. One involves Israel and the other involves America. The Israel subject involves Netanyahu's very dangerous offers to surrender Jewish land in the negotiations that he's conducting now with the Arab Nazi terrorists under the direction of the Obama-Kerry administration. Very dangerous developments going on here that we have to keep a very close eye on. And there are new developments this week. And the second thing I want to speak about is Bill de Blasio, Hillary Clinton, and the unbelievably dangerous situation in America, the unbelievable deterioration of everything that's going on in the United States. But first, Israel. We have warned since the 1970s that the phony right in Israel is usually even worse than the declared left, that the Likud and the phony right are more dangerous than the left when it comes to Israeli politics. In Israel, that happens to be the case. And we saw that with Menachem Begin surrendering the entire Sinai, something which the left-wing Labor Party never proposed and never supported doing. And we saw that with Arik Sharon expelling 10,000 Jews from their homes in Gush Katif and in northern Samaria, something which, again, the Labor Party had no intention of doing, and even the left-wing Labor Party never planned to do and couldn't carry out if they wanted to. And numerous other examples. Here, again, we see the great danger now, this past week, of the Netanyahu-Likud regime. We now learn that Bibi Netanyahu and the Likud, in the negotiations that Barack Hussein Obama and John Kerry, the anti-Semites, have organized between Israel and the PLO Fatah terrorists. In those negotiations, Netanyahu is offering to the Arab Nazi terrorists to surrender huge amounts of Jewish land in Judea and Samaria and to tear down Jewish settlements and Jewish communities there. He's offering this to them. Now, they have been reluctant to make a final agreement, because in a final agreement, they don't want to get into a final agreement yet with Israel. They want to squeeze everything they can get out first. And so it's very difficult for them, for Israel and the Arab Nazi terrorists to reach a final agreement. And so Netanyahu says, no problem. Let's do an interim agreement where we give you a huge chunk of Jewish land in Judea and Samaria, another 20-30% of Judea and Samaria, God forbid. The PLO terrorists already control about half of Judea and Samaria, almost half. He wants to give them another 20-30%, or who knows how much before this is over. Just like the Oslo agreements. And the Arab terrorists will just say, okay, in exchange for that, we will agree for the millionth time not to engage in violence, as they already promised to do in Oslo, and so on and so forth. A rehash of the Oslo promises. And meanwhile, Israel will throw huge numbers of Jews out of their homes, God forbid, and surrender huge amounts of Jewish land in Israel's biblical heartland in Judea and Samaria. This is what Netanyahu is proposing to the Arab Nazi terrorists. This is what they're discussing in the negotiations. Very, very dangerous. This is a renewal of the Oslo process, where Israel surrenders land and in exchange gets Arab terrorism. We told you there is a grave danger here. We warned you about this all along. We warned how essential it is that we be able to reach people and wake people up quickly enough. We've been doing our job. We've been trying day and night to wake people up and to reach people. Unfortunately, because of our limited budget, you know, there's a limit to how much we can do. We haven't done enough because we just don't have the means to do enough and to reach enough people. But we've been doing everything we can to wake people up and to alert people. We've been the only ones speaking out and warning that this was going to happen with Netanyahu. The only ones. For a long time, we were the only ones. Now others are starting to complain and are starting to see the great danger here. So now we're just one out of numerous groups in Israel. Originally, we were right from the start. When no one else spoke out, we said this is what Netanyahu represents. If, God forbid, the Arab Nazi terrorists accept Netanyahu's offer, we're going to be facing a situation much worse than Gush Katif and much worse than Oslo. We're going to be facing a situation where instead of the Arab terrorists controlling 40% of Judea and Samaria as they do now, they'll be controlling, God forbid, 60, 70%, who knows how much. And Jews will be thrown out of their homes and Jewish settlements will be taken down worse than Gush Katif. And the Arabs will be that much closer to having an independent state and to crippling Israel diplomatically, politically, economically, territorially. It'll just be a catastrophe, a complete catastrophe. It will make the creation of an Arab state in Judea and Samaria almost inevitable. God forbid. And this week, just in case any of you have any doubt that this is really taking place, because the Israeli news media is reporting on it, and we can reproduce on our forum if you want the Hebrew articles. We've been publicizing it on our English forum. The articles are all in Hebrew, but we can reproduce the articles if people want in Hebrew. But in addition to that, this week, we now know that 17 members of the Israeli Knesset, the Israeli Parliament. There are 120 members of the Knesset altogether, so 17 out of 120, that's a lot of Knesset members. 17 members of the Knesset, all of whom are either members of the Likud or of the Jewish Home Party, which are part of Netanyahu's coalition. In other words, 17 members of the Knesset that are part of his government coalition wrote him a letter warning him not to do this, warning him that this is a return to Oslo and this will endanger Israel and this is the worst thing that the Jewish people can do now. Warning him. 17 Knesset members wrote him a letter saying this. And so we have a situation here where this great danger now exists. If he continues to make these offers, and if the Arab Nazi terrorists, God forbid, if they accept it, then we're really in a lot of trouble. Then we're faced with mass expulsions again, and we're faced with a real difficult confrontation. Very, very bad situation. If, God forbid, the Arab terrorists accept this, and if he continues to make this offer, it'll be a catastrophe. We're doing our best here. We're fighting day and night to try to wake people up. Our videos, our Facebook pages, I believe, have added to the pressure on these 17 Knesset members who wrote to Netanyahu. I think we played a role. Because remember, for a long time, we were the only ones criticizing Netanyahu from the right, the only ones warning that he was going to do this. Other people said, he's freezing the Jewish communities, but he's not actually going to give up land. We said, no. If he's freezing them, that means that eventually he's ready to give up land too. This is a puppet of Obama and of the Jew haters in the Obama administration in Washington. He is acting like their puppet. He is very dangerous. We warned about this. Now others are saying what we're saying. They're not giving us credit for being the only ones who were right. If they had been with us from the start and had warned from the start, maybe we wouldn't be in this situation. But I do believe that we've played a role. I think we've played an important role here in terms of sounding the alarm for a long time, being the sole voice that sounds the alarm. I think that was important. Because once again, we're proving that the true Kahanists are the only ones who are right on these issues, right from the start. Always right and right from the start on these vital issues. And now that we're facing this real danger here, I believe that our videos and our Facebook pages are more important than ever. We've got to reach as many people as possible. We've got to keep the pressure up on Knesset members and others who were elected promising not to allow this to happen. Because you had Knesset members who were elected and they promised they wouldn't allow something like this to happen. We've got to keep the pressure on them. We've got to keep the pressure on them, and they've got to tell Netanyahu that he's going to be driven from office, that he's going to go down in history as a traitor and a disgrace to the Jewish people, which he is. We've got to keep that pressure on. We've got to keep the pot boiling to prevent this from happening, God forbid. So that hopefully, God willing, we can put enough pressure on Netanyahu not to continue making these very dangerous offers. And let's hope that Hashem saves us by getting the Arab terrorists to reject the offers, which I don't know. These offers are very generous, and the Arabs would be crazy to reject them. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable how insane this is. And by the way, don't think that because the Arabs rejected 95% of Judea and Samaria in the Camp David talks, that they're going to reject this. This is different. This is not a final agreement where the Arabs have to say we settle all differences and these are the final borders and this is the final agreement. This is not that type of situation where the Arabs are pushing for the maximum. This is a situation where they're just saying, oh, we'll just hand you land for nothing like we've been doing all this time. We just give you all this land as an interim little temporary agreement, and then after that you can demand more, which is the Oslo process. That type of agreement the Arabs did agree to repeatedly in the past, so there's a real danger here. Let's hope that Hashem does something to stop this, Hashem being God, that he does something to stop this miraculously. He has saved the Jewish people many times, so let's hope he saves us from this disaster. But we can't depend on miracles. We've got to keep the pressure up. So it's really important that people join with us and help us right now. This is a very dangerous time. And are we doing enough to stop this? No. No. Should there be mass protests in the streets of Israel and people blocking with their bodies and people saying we're not going to allow? Absolutely. But we don't have the strength to produce that. Because we don't have a budget, we don't reach enough people. We can't do that. We can only do what we can do. We urge people to do the right thing. We urge the Jews in Judea and Samaria to do that. And hopefully, if God forbid, the knife is at the throat, they will do that. They're hearing our message. Thousands of them are hearing our message. Let's hope that it influences them. We're doing everything we can. And it's very important that we do this. Is it enough? It's not even close to enough. But we're trying the best we can, and we have to continue to fight with whatever we have. We need your help in this. Very important, we need your help. And there's a second thing that came up this week, and that involves America. Bill de Blasio apparently won the Democratic primary runoff, I think he got more than 40%. I think they're still counting the votes, but I believe he's going to be the Democrat candidate for mayor of New York. And probably will get elected mayor of New York. Bill de Blasio, if you've seen our videos, you've seen what Bill de Blasio is all about. He's an Italian-American white guy who married a black admitted lesbian who is he's a radical left-wing white guy, self-hating white guy, who of all people decided to marry a very ugly, by the way, black lesbian who wrote an article in Esquire magazine. You can see it in our latest video that was done in Esquire magazine in 1979. His wife, his black wife, wrote an article saying I am a lesbian and bragging about her lesbianism and saying how proud she is. That's his wife. His son with the big afro like the Black Panthers, those, that's a Black Panther afro, that's black power, Black Panther, a racist symbol. Anyone who knows anything about the 1960s and the Black Power movement, the racist, the most vicious black racists and Jew haters had those afros. Angela Davis and the Black Panthers and the most extreme, disgusting, vile, hateful people. And now his son is wearing that big afro, and he put his son on all the television commercials to show how radical he is, to show the black voters who are taking over, to show them, hey, you see? This is real. We're real militants here. And he said in the commercial, his slogan was, the most progressive of all the candidates. That was his slogan. You know what the most progressive means? Of all the left-wing candidates, all the Democrats in the primary for mayor of New York were extreme left. And he was saying, I'm more left-wing than them. He was saying, they're not left-wing enough. I'm much more left-wing than they are. I mean, this is unbelievable madness. This is a guy who thinks Mike Bloomberg is a right winger. Mike Bloomberg, who supports gay marriage, who supports abortion on demand, who gave us the biggest tax increases in New York City history. Even when he came into office, New Yorkers were already paying the highest taxes in the country by far. And he slapped on middle class New Yorkers and middle income New Yorkers, on top of the fact that they were already paying the highest taxes in the country, he gave them, on top of that, another tax increase, this time the biggest tax increase in the city's history, to completely suffocate the middle class in New York. And this is after he promised when he was running, he swore he wasn't going to raise taxes. He said, no, that's going to hurt the city's economy, and he wouldn't do it. He said, no, I'm against raising taxes. And then several months later, he's in office, and here he is proposing the biggest tax increase in the city's history. And then raised it again later on. And increased spending, massive, tens of billions of dollars in increased spending for a city government. The hell is a city government spending these huge amounts? New York City has a bigger budget than 90% of the countries in the world. I mean, this is insane. Bill de Blasio says that's not enough. Mike Bloomberg, who is a radical leftist, is not spending enough, and he's too stingy, and the taxes aren't high enough. We have to raise taxes more. This guy is a madman. And he just won the Democrat nomination to become mayor of New York in a city which voted 81% for Barack Hussein Obama. So obviously he's the favorite to win. He was Hillary Clinton's campaign manager. When she ran for the Senate in New York in the year 2000, Bill de Blasio was her campaign manager. And remember, her main aide, her main staff, the main staff person, the staff person that she's so close to all these years, is Huma Abedin from the Muslim Brotherhood, a Muslim terrorist Brotherhood member. And Hillary Clinton herself said in the 1990s, she's studying Islam. She wants to take a couple of years and study Islam. Well, she's studying Islam. Her and her daughter want to study Islam. I guess they want to become Muslims. And then she hires Huma Abedin, Anthony Weiner's wife. And for years, Huma Abedin was her closest aide and associate. There are even rumors about something going on between the two of them. I mean, just unbelievable. She's going to be the next president, according to all the polls. Bill de Blasio is going to be the next mayor of New York, and Hillary Clinton will be the next president. In other words, it's not enough that we have more than three years of Barack Hussein Obama and John Kerry and Joe Biden and this horrible administration, this evil, monstrous administration that's destroying America. That's not enough. After that, we get Hillary Clinton. If that happens, let me tell you something. If after 3 years of Obama, then we get Hillary Clinton, it's over. It's over if that happens. You can kiss this country goodbye. Because then it just goes on forever. Because by then, the demographics will change so dramatically. And because every year now, the demographics of the country becomes less and less white Anglo, less and less. And more of the so-called minority voters who vote liberal, left-wing Democrat are becoming a higher and higher percentage of the voters and a higher percentage of the population. They're already, majority of the babies being born are already non-white. The majority of infants in the country are non-white. I mean, the future is quite clear where the country's going. And so if she gets in 2016, forget it. Forget it. It's over. And so, you know, again, we want to be a voice warning about her and her connection to de Blasio and her connection to Huma Abedin and her corruption and her very left-wing position. People don't realize how left-wing she is. We want to be a voice doing that as well, because that's also important. And this week we were reminded of just how important that is. The survival of Israel is really in danger now because of this disgusting, cowardly, ghetto-minded traitor, Bibi Netanyahu. Just a disgusting, cowardly, wimpy, pathetic loser. And he really is endangering Israel. He's just offering the Jewish land like it's nothing. Just offering to throw away the most important, the most precious parts of biblical Israel. I mean, just insanity. And we've got to expose this, and we've got to fight him now. Most Israelis, by the way, right now are against doing this. Most Israelis, according to polls, are against this type of offer. So if we wake people up, we have a shot. If we can reach enough people and wake enough people up, we have a shot at stopping this. But we need help. And we need everybody to get involved here. It's a critical time. This is a real critical time. And as far as America is concerned, this is a critical time. This is a critical time to expose. I don't think we're going to be able to stop de Blasio from winning. And yes, you know, Joe LaHorta is a self-hating Jew. His maternal grandmother was Jewish, which means halachically he's Jewish. And now he's, you know, following a different religion, and he's a self-hating Jew. There's no question about it that he has no connection to the Jewish people, and he also berated a Holocaust survivor and threatened the Holocaust survivor and challenged this old man. I think he was in his 80s, challenged him to a fight. I mean, just a real piece of garbage. Joe LaHorta is a piece of garbage. He's a leftist. He's a piece of garbage. He supports gay marriage. He supports abortion. He supports gun control. He supports all these terrible things. He says he's going to meet with Al Sharpton. I mean, he's a piece of garbage. He's the Republican candidate. Can you imagine this? But the one thing he will do is he will continue the Giuliani policy on crime. That he will continue. So to save the lives of innocent people, and to at least have some sort of semblance of order, at least for a while, temporarily in the city, at least for the next 4 years, there'll be a little, some order. There won't be complete chaos and a return to the high crime levels. For the sake of that, I think that Joe LaHorta is a lesser of the evils. And I think people should hold their nose and vote for him, as bad as he is. This is an emergency situation where people's lives are on the line. And I think that he is a lesser of the evils in this case. But I don't think he's going to win in any event. I think that Bill de Blasio is going to win because there's just an overwhelming Democrat advantage in the city. And it's just, but again, even if Bill de Blasio wins, I want to start warning people about Hillary Clinton. I want to start a campaign against her. I think it's important that people understand what we're dealing with, how dangerous Hillary Clinton really is. If you agree that we have to step up our campaign to wake the people of Israel up before it's too late, before Israel creates another Oslo process, this time under Netanyahu and the Likud, that we have to stop this before it's too late. And if you agree that in America we have to try to stop Hillary Clinton and try to stop people like Clinton and de Blasio from destroying the United States as well, if you agree, then help us. Get involved with us and help us. When you see us putting up Hebrew and English videos, help promote those videos in the YouTube and Facebook search engines. There are search engines on YouTube, Google, Facebook. They're all impacted when you like, favorite, comment, mirror, and share videos. If you like, favorite, comment, mirror, and share the videos on YouTube and on Facebook, it impacts their position on the search engines on YouTube, on Facebook, and even in Google, and even in Google and the other search engines. So help us with those Hebrew and English videos. It only takes a few minutes. When you see us put up a video, go there, like, favorite, comment, mirror, share. Do whatever you can to help us promote those videos. It's not such a big sacrifice when you consider everything that's at stake. Secondly, we need your help on the forums and on the Facebook pages. We need good posts, good threads, comments that will make people want to become active, that will wake people up, that will make the forums and the Facebook and our Facebook pages inviting places, so that people want to become involved, so that it will strengthen our movement, so that we can better confront these problems. And last but not least, of course, our biggest downfall, and the downfall of Rabbi Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik V'Kadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, the downfall of all good Jewish activists since the Holocaust, has been financial. We need everything we can get. We need whatever we can get to throw into the fight. Every check, every money order, every cash donation, it does make a difference. God bless the great JTFers who are helping us. Help us. Really, really, we really need your help. And again, those people who send checks, money orders, cash donations to our post office box through the regular mail, you're doing a tremendous mitzvah. You're really, really helping us, a tremendous blessed deed by helping us at this critical time. There's no cause more worthy than this. And also, if you prefer, if you instead of sending checks, money orders, or cash donations through the regular mail to the post office box, if you prefer, for the sake of convenience, doing it with your credit card online, you can just go to our English main page, jtf.org, or our Hebrew main page, hayamin.org, and there's a donate button on top. You can do it with your credit card very quickly and conveniently. That's where we stand. Help us. This is a critical time. Get involved with us. This is a time for action. It's a time that will be very, very important. And we need your prayers. We need to pray to God that He save us from this very, very bad situation that seems to be coming in our direction. Let's hope, God willing, that we can stop this. It is still possibly preventable. I don't know. We're going to try our best. We're going to try to influence things. We're going to try our best. At least with us, you know one thing for sure. We will do everything we can. We will not compromise, and we will do everything we can to try to turn the situation around. Is that enough? It isn't. But it's something, and it does have some influence. I do think it has some influence. And so, are we obligated to try our best under those circumstances? Absolutely. We're obligated to do everything we can and try our very best. Anyway, that's where we stand this week. Very critical time. And now we're going to go to our questions from our great JTFers. Okay. And let me just check something here as I do all the time here. And now we start off with the great Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, what is your opinion on the Jewish rapper Mac Miller? People say he's the next Vanilla Ice. Can you compare the two?" Unquote. Mac Miller is a 21-year-old kid who already is an admitted drug addict. He tattooed his whole body, and tattoos, by the way, are forbidden by the Torah. And Jews who have tattoos can remove them with laser surgery. They're not forbidden by Gentiles, can have tattoos if they want. I don't think that they're particularly, I don't know, I wouldn't advise it, but Jews are not allowed to tattoo their bodies. Jews are not allowed to tattoo their bodies, and he tattooed his whole body. And again, and he's already an admitted drug addict. He was deeply involved with drugs and rehab and everything else already. He's 21 years old. He's already spent years fighting drug addiction. And he sings, if you call that singing. He imitates baboons and a gorilla that rant, and they call it music. He imitates black criminals and imitates the culture of black criminals. So that's what I think of him. I think he's scum. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And now we go to our good friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what do you think of the race for mayor of New York? Do you think that these are the worst people to run?" Unquote, unquote. Absolutely, I think they're the worst people to run. I mean, we've got it's come down to two candidates, Bill de Blasio and Joe LaHorta. I can't stand either one of them, but I think LaHorta is the lesser of the evils. I think de Blasio is going to win anyway. I think he's going to win, but I think that people should vote against him, should vote for LaHorta. Even if de Blasio does win, bringing down LaHorta's vote total, I think, is also something that's worthwhile. Thank you, Joe Gutfeld. And now we go to the great Yamach Shmoda Lewinsky, who writes, and I quote, "Please say something about Viley Slutris, Yamach Shma Vazichra." Okay, let's start with that, because there are 2 points here. I think what Yamach Shmoda Lewinsky is referring to is Miley Cyrus. And she, you know, it's interesting that she calls herself a Southern Baptist Christian. She claims she's a Christian in the Southern Baptist tradition. And all she does day and night is promote so-called gay rights, sodomite rights. This is all she does. She's even tattooed a gay rights tattoo on her finger to show how committed she is to so-called gay rights. She's also a drug user who smokes pot all the time and brags about it. Her music and the other things she does are disgusting. When she was 15 years old, she posed topless. I mean, it's just the lowest of the low. If America follows and goes down the path of scum like this, America is finished. Very simple. America's finished. And people who go down this path are going down the path of a sewer. And they're gonna pay one hell of a price someday. Someday they're gonna have to answer for it, because this is not a godly way to behave. This goes against God. It goes against what God wants in this world, and anyone who goes against God is doing something very, very foolish. Now, Yamach Shmo to Lewinsky writes, and I quote, also, please talk about why Pedofront admires Malcolm X, Yamach Shmo v'zichro. Gee, I wonder why. Pedofront, meaning Stormfront, which is the neo-Nazi website. Well, they admire Malcolm X because he's a racist and he's an anti-Semite, and they're racist and they're anti-Semites, even though they supposedly hate black people, but they, you know, they like racists like fellow racists. You'll see the Nazis frequently praising Louis Farrakhan, praising Osama bin Laden, praising the Muslim terrorists. You remember they were all celebrating on 9/11. They were so happy that 3,000 innocent Americans were murdered. You remember all the Nazi websites were celebrating and having parties and congratulating the Al-Qaeda terrorists? This is the mentality. Evil people are attracted to other evil people. It's just one of the rules of life. Thank you, Yamach Shmo to Lewinsky. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, one, your thoughts of Syria giving up its chemical weapons to avert U.S. strike, unquote. I don't trust anything Syria says or promises, and I don't trust anything Russia says or promises, and I don't trust anything Obama says or promises. They're all liars. They're all liars. The only reason we're in this situation, as Shlomo said on one of the great videos that he did on this subject, the only reason we're in this situation is for Obama to save face because he stupidly issued that red line. He made a threat about a red line. Where's the red line when it comes to Iran? There is no red line. But here he issued a so-called red line statement. He's so full of baloney. Such a liar. I don't trust Syria, I don't trust Russia, and I don't trust the Obama administration. So anything they say, as far as I'm concerned, you can take it, you know, you can take it not with a grain of salt, you can take it with a ton of salt, as far as I'm concerned. And Dr. Dan now writes, two, which U.S. presidents take after Pepe, Barack, Rabin, Perez, and Bozo, unquote. I actually think that U.S. presidents don't take after these Israeli prime ministers. I think that there's a different mentality. I think the Israeli prime ministers are even worse than the U.S. presidents. As much as U.S. presidents have sold out the United States, I haven't seen an American president yet saying we're going to surrender 75% of the United States to Al-Qaeda in exchange for a peace treaty like Menachem Begin did when he surrendered the Sinai, which was 75% of the land that Israel had. I haven't seen an American president do that yet. I haven't seen American presidents do what Netanyahu is doing. I haven't seen this type of behavior. I haven't seen an American president saying Americans and whites are not allowed to live in a certain part of the United States because we intend to surrender it to America's enemies. I haven't seen anybody doing that yet. Only Israeli prime ministers do that. So as bad as American presidents are, I think the way Israeli prime ministers behave has been even worse, even crazier. Nowhere in the world do people act as crazy as the Jews in Israel. Nowhere. And Dr. Dan, we've got to change that. God commands us to do what we can to change that, to wake people up. That's our obligation. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And now, because the reason I'm mentioning that, Dr. Dan, is because some people say, oh, you know, they're so crazy, I'm washing my hands of this. God forbid. Anyone who washes their hands of it is just as bad. They're part of the problem then. People who don't speak out, who don't do something, will be held accountable. God will ask, what did you do when this great, terrible danger existed for Israel? Or when these great issues came up? That's something God will ask all of us. And that's why we have to speak out, and we have to do everything we can. Even if the odds are against us, even if it seems like a very difficult situation, and it is, we are obligated to try our best. We're obligated to do that. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And now we go to our good friend, Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, please explain the custom of when a Jewish man and Jewish woman are introduced to each other, they are not to shake hands, unquote. Well, that's a tradition that some religious Jews follow. And the reason they follow that tradition, and it's not just with Jewish men and Jewish, if a religious Jew, whether man or woman, meets someone of the opposite sex, sometimes they don't shake hands. Some religious Jews follow that, some don't. But the reason you have that rule, but all religious Jews respect it, very much respect that custom. And the reason you have that situation is so as not to create temptation. When a man and a woman touch each other, you never know. It could create some sort of temptation. You never know. Judaism wants us to be moral. Judaism wants us to build families with children and the love of a family and the love of a man and his wife, a husband and wife. Judaism wants that to be the relationship that people build. Husband, wife, children, family. And things that in any way can interfere with that, Judaism frowns upon. It's against the reason we're in this world. One of the reasons we're in this world is to meet our soulmate, get married, and have children. That's a very important purpose to be in this world. And to do things outside of that framework, or anything that will tempt people to do things outside of that framework, is something that we don't encourage. So it's for that reason. That's the main reason why some people observe this custom. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to the great Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "Do you think Obama would choose October 6th to start his war in Syria? The Arabs call the Yom Kippur War the October War. It began on October 6th, 1973, unquote. I don't think that Obama's looking at the calendar and deciding to do things based on the calendar or on things, events that happened in history between Israel and the Muslim world. I don't think so, even though he is a Muslim. I don't think he calculates things on that basis. At this point, I don't see a war erupting in regard to Syria. I don't see that happening now. I think Obama backed down. I think he backed down, and I think Syria came out the winner over here. Syria and Russia came out the winner because of Obama's cowardice and his weakness. Of course, he should never have started this red line and started this whole mess. He should be going after Iran. Iran is the problem, not Syria. But once he did open up his mouth and put his foot in his mouth and said something stupid, then he says something stupid, he puts the prestige of the United States on the line, and then he backs down and he makes Russia and Putin the big winners here. I mean, just unbelievable. You couldn't, if the worst enemies of America were writing the script, they couldn't do a better job of hurting the United States than what Obama has been doing. Thank you, Binyamin Yisrael. And now we go to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom, can you give some Divrei Torah from the writings of Rambam's Moreh Nevuchim, Todah?" Unquote. Okay. Moreh Nevuchim, the Harambam, which is in English, they call him sometimes Maimonides, one of the great rabbinic scholars of all time. He wrote Moreh Nevuchim. Moreh Nevuchim means the guide to the perplexed. A masterpiece that deals with all types of issues. In the time of Harambam, in his day, there were a lot of Jews, a lot of educated Jews were being confused by Greek and Arab philosophers. And by the way, when I say Arab philosophers, these were non-Muslim Arabs. Before Islam completely took over and completely captured the whole Arab world, you had Arabs who really weren't interested in Islam and were outside of Islam, and you had some very, very great Arab philosophers. I don't mean that I don't agree with their philosophy, but they were brilliant. You had some brilliant Greek and Arab philosophers in the Middle Ages. And they confused a lot of educated Jews who would read their works or hear about their works, and they didn't know what the answers were to the things they were saying. So Harambam responds to that brilliantly, decisively, in Guide to the Perplexed. Really knocks down piece by piece certain parts of what the philosopher said he agrees with. If he thinks they were right on certain subjects, he says he thinks they were right, and he agrees with them. But the things that contradict Torah Judaism, he really, really brilliantly deals with it. Brilliantly. It's Guide to the Perplexed is an absolute masterpiece. And it answers, and it's relevant to today because it answers claims of atheists and agnostics and others and idolaters and others. I mean, just brilliant, a masterpiece. I'll give you one illustration. You want the Devar Torah from it. I'll give you an illustration. Harambam says that there are four levels of human development. The first level, he said, is the lowest level. It's materialistic. And they're essential. They're all essential. All four are essential, but we start with the lowest and go to the highest. The lowest level is materialistic. Human beings need food, housing, clothes, money, etc. in order to survive, in order to subsist, even if you want to study Torah. You got to eat, you have to have a roof over your head, you have to have basics. If you have a family, you have to support your family. So you need food and housing and clothes and money, and you need all these things. But according to Harambam, this is the lowest of the four things that you need. And this is the thing that most of humanity concentrates most on. They concentrate obsessively on getting more money and more, and just enriching themselves. And, you know, that's what they concentrate on, and materialism, and bigger house, and bigger car, and bigger, you know, that's what most people concentrate on. Harambam says that is foolish behavior, that you should get what you need. You should get what you need, and there's nothing, and Judaism does not frown upon even becoming wealthy. If you become wealthy, as long as you use it for good purpose, if you use it for good purposes, it's good. But it should not be your main goal in life, because the money and the housing and the clothes and the food and the jewelry and the all the other things that you can get, that's not even really connected to you. It's something that you temporarily have in this world, which you're not going to have once you leave this world. It's not even connected to you. So it should not be your main focus. But he says that's the first thing, is the materialistic needs. That's the first part of human development, the lowest. The second part of human development is the physical, the body. For men, it's usually strength, building up muscles and trying to be as strong as possible. And for women, it's beauty, physical beauty. So the body is the second thing. And of course, it also involves health. You want to be healthy. You want to do exercise. Men should want to be strong. If men are strong, if men know how to fight, if men have a good physical, are physically capable of doing things in life, that's very important, very good for you. You should do that. Women who want to look beautiful, that's perfectly fine, perfectly natural. There's nothing wrong with that. But when you do it obsessively and that becomes the most important thing in your life, that's not wise. That is not wise. Because no matter how strong a man becomes, let's talk about men who are building their muscles up, which is good. You know, I'm in favor of weightlifting and I'm in favor of being athletic and I'm in favor of everything that makes you strong because it's healthy, because it's good for you, it's healthy. But let's say no matter how strong you become, you'll never be as strong as an animal. I mean, you'll still, in terms of physical strength, you'll still be inferior to an elephant, for instance, or to a lion, or to other types of animals, or to a whale. Are you ever going to be as strong as a whale, or an elephant, or a lion, or a horse? You're not going to be as strong as they are. I don't care what you do, you're not going to be as strong as them. I'm talking about a big horse. You're not going to be as strong as they are. And so, while physical strength is good, and physical strength is important, Not to exaggerate. Let's try to be strong and try to do healthy things and exercise. That's important, but not go overboard and make this the main focus of our life. For women, beauty should not be the main focus of life. A woman wanting to look attractive is wonderful. Women are very beautiful, and it's wonderful, and men love to see women make themselves pretty. Very, very nice to do it for your husbands especially. Very, very nice. But to make that the main focus in life, or the most important thing in your life, that is not wise, because it is not the most important thing. It's important, but it's not the most important thing. So first we have materialistic, right? The materialistic needs. Then we have the physical bodily needs. That's the second level of human development. The third is what we call midot, which are morals. Harambam then says morals are the third level. He says that morals are essential, we've got to be kind and have love and compassion and help people and do all this. Very, very important, essential. That's the third level. That's high, a higher level than the physical or the materialistic. Very important to have morals. But it's not the most important, because while it's important for society, what if you're alone? Harambam asks, what if you're alone? Let's say you're alone on some island, and you're all alone, and you'll never, you don't meet anybody. There's nobody there. You're all by yourself. You're stranded on an island. What good do the morals that you have? What good? How are you going to be able to apply them? If you're humble, for instance, which is a good characteristic, how are you going to be able to apply that if you're all alone? Or if you're kind to other people, or polite or kind, how are you going to be able to apply that to someone else if you're literally all alone? So it's important for society to have morals and midot, but it is not part of your character itself. So it's not the highest. It's not the highest. It's the second highest. It's not the highest. So far we have materialistic development, physical development, and moral development. Those are the three levels we've got so far. The fourth and highest level, according to Harambam, the highest level is understanding godly concepts, understanding why we're in this world, and understanding the concept of God, His existence, and godly concepts. That is the highest level according to Harambam. There are other sages who put morals on top. Harambam doesn't. He makes it second to understanding godly concepts. But in any event, that's the way Harambam lists the four levels of human development in Morei Nevuchim. He does it brilliantly. He's very, very persuasive, very powerful arguments that he puts forward there. And it's great reading. It's really brilliant. Thank you, Tag Mechir Tzedek. And now we go to our good friend, Anthony Weiner is a pedo pervert married to a camel. I couldn't put it better than myself. Anthony Weiner is a pedo pervert married to a camel, writes, and I quote, one, master builder, quote unquote, Robert Moses was a Jew convert to the Episcopal faith, unquote. Yeah, well, you know, all the self-hating Jews become Episcopalians. You know, the New York Nazi Times Jews, they all became Episcopalians. You know, because that's one of the easy liberal churches, you know, that the Jews feel comfortable in, that the self-hating Jews feel comfortable in. And now Anthony Weiner is a pedo pervert married to a camel, writes, and I quote, two, Carl Bernstein blames Jewish neocons for war in Iraq, unquote. Well, Carl Bernstein is a self-hating Jew. You know, he's involved with the left-wing anti-Israel news media. He himself is anti-Israel. He's a self-hating Jew, always was a self-hating Jew, always was a leftist. As you know, we in JTF were against the war in Iraq. We were against it when everybody was supporting it. I mean, we were against it from the very beginning. We said Iran is the problem, not Iraq. Just like we say Iran is the problem, not Syria, we said the same thing about Iraq. If you go to our website, if you've seen our website and our shows at that time, when George W. Bush got us stuck in Iraq for no reason at all and ignored the Iranian threat, we were saying that, we were warning that this was a terrible mistake. But the claim that Jewish neocons are responsible for the war is really unbelievably ridiculous. Okay? George W. Bush and Dick Cheney were not Jewish neocons. And the term neocon, by the way, is a code word for Jews. It's an anti-Semitic code word. And George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, John McCain, Donald Rumsfeld, all of these guys, the leading figures that pushed for the war in Iraq, were not Jewish. Of course, they're going to find some underling like Wolfowitz, you know, who was one of the advisors to Cheney, and say, "Ah, you see, Wolfowitz, that proves it." They find some Jewish name somewhere and they say, "Ah, you see, the Jews, they push for it." Complete nonsense. Complete nonsense. Is it true that there were self-hating Jews that were in favor of this? Yes, it is true. Of course it's true. But the claim that they were responsible for this, that's anti-Semitism. That's baloney. Complete baloney. Thank you. Anthony Weiner is a pedo pervert married to a camel. And now we go to the great Da Vinci, who writes, and I quote, both Syria and Iran are ruled by Shiites. why does the Syrian regime treat Christians better than the Iranian one, unquote. Because the Syrian regime has a minority Shiite Alawite government. The Alawite Shiites in Syria are a minority. Most Syrians are Sunnis. And so the Assad regime belongs to a minority sect in Islam. And so he grabs every other minority he can get his hands on in Syria. At one time there were quite a few Christians in Syria. Most of them, of course, have fled over the years because the Muslim maniacs murder, rape, and torture them. But he grabbed the Christian minority there and he said, okay, I'll protect you, but you got to be loyal to me. He wanted anyone he could get who's going to be loyal to his regime. And so he formed an alliance, a temporary alliance with the Christian minority there. In Iran, you don't have that situation. There's no need for that, so the real Islamic anti-Christian hatred comes out in Iran. Assad and the Shiite Muslims also hate the Christians, but they use them because they need everybody they can get because they're outnumbered in Syria by the Sunnis. So they grab everybody they can get and turn them into an ally. Any minorities they could get their hands on in Syria in order to fight against the Sunnis, they use them. They use them because they need soldiers and they need people to back them because they're outnumbered. So that's why the Christians in Syria support Assad. They know Assad is a butcher and a lunatic, but they're afraid that the Al-Qaeda terrorists on the Sunni side will do even worse to them than what Assad will do to them, because they know that Assad needs them. And that's basically true. Whereas in Iran, you don't have that situation, so the Iranians murder Christians, torture Christians, burn churches, and we know about the terrible, horrible things that happened to the Christians in Iran. Thank you, Da Vinci, and now we go to the great LKZ, who writes, and I quote, "Are Bami and Putin using the Syria non-crisis to help Iran get nuclear bombs?" Unquote. I don't know if they deliberately... Well, you know, actually, I don't think so. I think that there really is a Syrian civil war. The Sunnis, who are the majority of Syrian Muslims, really want the minority Alawite Shiite Assad government out. So there really is this violent, murderous, genocidal hatred between the Shiites and the Sunnis in Syria. That really exists. I mean, you have this inter-Muslim, genocidal, bloody hatred. That really does exist. So there's a real civil war going on there, and I think that Assad used the chemical weapons just because he wanted to, slaughter his enemies. And by the way, I think that some of the chemical weapons may have been used. You may have had chemical weapons being used by the Al Qaeda terrorists, by the Al Qaeda Sunnis on the other side. You may have had them, both sides being using it, because both sides have certainly committed tremendous atrocities. Now, once you have this type of situation, does it divert attention from Iran and the nuclear threat? It does. So it certainly, I don't know if they deliberately planned this in advance, but it certainly is taking attention away from the Iranian nuclear bomb-making program, and it's certainly playing into the hands of Putin and Russia and Iran in allowing Iran to go forward. That it's certainly doing that, and the reason it's doing that is because Netanyahu and Israel are allowing Iran to get away with it. As simple as that. Because they won't attack. The Israeli Air Force can take care of this problem, and we have an Israeli Prime Minister who's a traitor and who won't do that. Thank you, LKZ. And now we go to our good friend Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, should the Jews of Brooklyn be worried about the election of Ken Thompson as the new Brooklyn District Attorney?" Unquote. I think the Jews of Brooklyn should be worried about everything in Brooklyn. Ken Thompson is a black guy who was just elected district attorney in Brooklyn. I think they should be worried about everything in Brooklyn. Brooklyn is not a place where Jews are safe. It is now an overwhelmingly non-white borough. Jews are despised by the so-called minorities that live in that borough. And, you know, what can I say? I mean, it's just, I think it's crazy. And many of the Jews in Brooklyn are religious. Instead of moving to Eretz Yisrael, the beautiful Jewish homeland that we've been given, they want to live in a place like that. Just unbelievable. It's just crazy. I mean, If anybody knows what Brooklyn looks like, and if anybody knows what Eretz Yisrael, the beautiful land of Israel, looks like, the idea that anybody would knowingly choose to choose Brooklyn over Israel, I mean, people who do that, I think putting them in a mental asylum is not sufficient. I think the patients in the mental asylum would protest. I mean, has anybody seen Crown Heights or Borough Park or these other neighborhoods where these religious Jews live? They're the ugliest, nastiest neighborhoods. Dirty, ugly, nasty neighborhoods surrounded by criminals and beasts and Jew haters. And that's where they want to live and not live in the beautiful land of Israel. I mean, I think it's sick beyond words, in my opinion. Thank you, Maimonides. And now we go to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, please discuss the pressure on the NFL Washington Redskins. Oh, I'm sorry. Please discuss the pressure the NFL Washington Redskins are facing to change their nickname because some consider it racist against Native Americans, unquote. Well, everything now is politically correct. Everything is politically correct. So, of course, this is also, why is that an insult that, all right, Redskins, is that bad that they're calling the football, you know, they're calling a football team after people who have red skin? Is that bad? Is that a negative stereotype? Why is that bad? I wish that was the type of stereotype they use against Jews. Instead of us being stereotyped by Woody Allen and Schmuck Schumer and these horrible creatures in Hollywood. I wish that was the stereotype they were using against Jews, that we're like a football team. They name football teams after us. I wish they would do that to the Jews. I'll tell you what. EB, why don't you write to the Washington Redskins and tell them we'll take the name. Okay? We'll be happy to have Jews take that name instead, if the Indians don't want it. Okay? I don't see what's so bad about it. Thank you, EB22, and now we go to the great Paper Cut, who writes, and I quote, Chaim, 880,000 patriotic bikers versus 59 camel-raping, child-molesting muzzies met face-to-face in D.C. on 9/11/13. Talk about it, unquote. Paper Cut, I actually didn't even, this is the first time I'm seeing this. I did not look through these questions before, so this is the first time I'm seeing this. I did not know anything about this. I didn't even know this took place. Let me quickly take a look at this. Let me see if I can find something on this and see what this is all about. I honestly did not see this at all, and this is the first time I'm hearing about this. Bikers versus Muslims? Let's try that. Okay, Muslim rally vastly outnumbered by bikers counter-protesters in the Washington Times. A few dozen demonstrators attending a rally on the mall once billed as the Million Muslim March were vastly outnumbered Wednesday by a Christian group objecting to their event and a counter-protest consisting of motorcycle riders honoring September 11 victims. The noon rally called the Million American March Against Fear took place between the 13th and 14th streets and so on and so forth by the American Muslim Public Political Action Committee. Speakers, okay, and Cornel West, the speaker, and so on. Christian counter-demonstrators heckled the group, with some holding signs that read, One Nation Under God, or disparaging the Muslim prophet Muhammad. You picked the wrong day, counter-demonstrators shouted at times. Let me tell you something, Paper Cut. I have tremendous respect for these bikers. I give them all the credit in the world. That is wonderful. That is wonderful. That's what people should do. They stood up to these beasts who murdered 3,000 innocent Americans on September 11th and gave them the answer that they should give them and even attacked Muhammad and so on and so forth. Absolutely wonderful. Wonderful. All the credit in the world I give them. Absolutely great. I think they're fantastic. The people who went there, the bikers and the Christian counter-protesters, absolutely great. I think it's fantastic. I take my hat off to them. They, if everybody responded like this, this would be a better country. This would be a much better country. I didn't even know about this until you showed me this. Look at how the media covered this up. You know why the media covered this up? Because this is a great story that could encourage good patriotic Americans to do the right thing. That's why they covered it up. But this is a great story. Thank you for bringing this to our attention. Thank you for bringing this to my attention. I didn't even know in New York the media gave zero coverage to this. I am very, very, I'm very happy to see this. Thank you, Papercut. And now we go to Russian Leo 777, our good friend, who writes, and I quote, "Please expose an ugly Muslim she-beast by the name of Christiane Amanpour. She should be required to wear a burqa," unquote. Oh, absolutely. I think she should be, well, anyway, we'll leave it at that. Yeah, she should be required to wear a burqa. That's the very least. She is an evil, anti-American, anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, half-Iranian piece of garbage married to Jamie Rubin, married to a self-hating Jew named Jamie Rubin from the State Department. And, of course, Jamie Rubin has worked with the Clintons, another one of the Hillary and Bill Clinton self-hating Jews. And she's married to him. She's married to him, and she has been smearing America, Israel, Jews, Christians, for years on CNN. Everywhere she goes, she smears people. She is a vicious, evil, very ugly woman. I hope something happens to her similar to what happened to the victims of the terrorists that she defends, the Muslim terrorists that she defends. Thank you, Russian Leo 777. And now we go to the great, "I am a dog trapped in a human body undergoing transplant," who writes, and I quote, "I have gotten my head replaced with a dog head and I'm getting dog hormones now. I feel like I am liberated to my true self. You look down on me, bigot," unquote. Oh, this is great. I think it's fantastic. I think your name is great. I think your name is great, and this really tells it like it is. Absolutely great. I love it. Thank you very much. I am a dog trapped in a human body undergoing transplant. And now we go to the great Kahana loyalist, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, it has come to light that Matthew Shepard was indeed killed over drugs, not being gay. Do you think this will have any effect?" Unquote. It won't have any effect because the people who should be exposing this are all on the defensive. The news media certainly is not going to tell us about this. Once the media starts spreading their big lie, there's no, you never have anybody on the other side counteracting the big lie of the media. Never. I mean, that's just the way it works. And so, you know, this is another lie. This is just another lie. And until we get an alternative right-wing media in the United States, in Israel, and in Western countries, until we have an alternative right-wing media, this is the type of disinformation and distortion that's going to be taking place. They're going to try to turn someone who, I don't know the story here, but I mean, if he was looking to buy drugs or sell drugs or do something like that, and they turned him into some sort of hero for doing that, and said, oh, he was killed because of homophobia, they made such a big deal over this. They made such a fuss over this. For years, they've made such a fuss over this. You would think that if this has come out now, that, you know, you would think that somebody would be correcting the record, but no. And again, this is because we don't have a real alternative media, and that's something that we have to create. Thank you, Kahana Loyalist. And now we go to our great friend Ephraim Ben Noach, who writes, and I quote, "Why would the U.S. send Israel any info, being this administration hates Jews? I'm talking about the Zuckerberg post," unquote. Oh, Ephraim, no, they send Israel information about right-wing Jews that are writing on Facebook. That's what they send them information on. They don't send them information to help the good Jews in Israel. They send them information against the good Jews in Israel. That's what they do. The only Jews that have ever gotten in any trouble on Facebook are right-wing Jews. in Israel. I mean, they have gone after right-wing Jews in Israel. Now, we our people, because we, you know, we explain to people what they can and cannot say, so our people have not gotten into any trouble, thank God, because we're very careful. We're very careful about what we say. But, you know, you have Jews who understandably get carried away and get very angry with, you know, they see innocent Jews being murdered and they see terrible things happening. And so they say, oh, I wish to just go out and slaughter these Arab Muslim terrorists, these slaughter these beasts. You know, they make statements like that. They make certain statements sometimes. And by the way, you're allowed to say slaughter Arab terrorists, but you're not allowed to say slaughter the Arabs. If you say slaughter Arabs or slaughter Muslims, that's illegal under Israeli law. If you say slaughter Jews, by the way, under Israeli law, that's okay, that's fine. You'll never get into, you never get into trouble for saying that, never. But if you say slaughter Arabs or slaughter, or I support, even if you say I support Tag Mechir, using spray paint to spray graffiti on an Arab car after Arabs murder Jews, if you say that, they'll come down on you, they'll go crazy. So we, you know, we try to explain to our people in Israel what can and cannot be said and how people should watch themselves. There are certain things you have to know about the law. You can say Arab terrorists should be killed. That you're allowed to say. Muslim terrorists should be killed. You can't say Muslims or Arabs should be killed, but you can say Arab terrorists or Muslim terrorists. You add the word terrorists, you can say that. There's certain things you can say and certain things you can't say. People in our movement know that. And so people in our movement who follow what we tell, you know, follow the instructions, don't get into trouble. But you sometimes have other people who don't know about this and who just get carried away and think that Israel is a free country and they don't realize that it's not. And, you know, and the information that's being sent to the Israeli government is information against the good Jews. That's the only information that they send to the Israeli government. They don't send them, believe me, no, there has never been a leftist Jew who has ever gotten into trouble for saying the worst thing, for saying religious Jews should be slaughtered and there should be a Holocaust against religious Jews, and you should see some of the things they write, and which is all illegal under Israeli law to speak like that, and yet not one leftist Jew has ever in the history of the state of Israel been prosecuted for making statements like that, whereas hundreds of right-wing Jews who made statements that are much less serious than that have been arrested and have been prosecuted. So that just shows you what type of country, because all the prosecutors, all of them, the prosecutor's office, the police, all controlled by the left. Thank you, Ephraim. And let me just see here. And we have the great Confederate Kahanist who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, what do most Arab Muzis think about black people? Thanks and God bless, unquote. Great question. Arabs despise black people. Remember, in the Sudan, the Arab Muslims murdered 2 million black Muslims and black Christians in the south, in the southern Sudan. You had a civil war there between the Arab North and the black South. They murdered 2 million black people in the south, many of whom were Muslims, just because of the color of their skin. Arabs have a lot of black slaves to this day. They have black slaves. There is still slavery in the Arab world, in the Muslim world. Right now, to this day, they have black people as slaves. So they despise black people. So the blacks who want to become Muslims are the stupidest, most ignorant, most cowardly, most self-hating, most primitive morons on the face of the earth. Because they're supporting those who've committed genocide against them, who've enslaved them, who started slavery to begin with. Thank you, Confederate Kahanist. And I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, Shalom.